are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Come to feel what you need when what you really want inside. of your life.
Running like a rare disease.
Running like a rare disease. Ghetto people.
Stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, yo. You got to learn to love yourself.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we review the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, Conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Baba Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything was well for you today. Hope you're going to have a good day today on this Black Friday. hope you're going to get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. Hoping to weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But, of course, if it is not, then, you know, you won't get it done anyways because it has to get done. Now, I mean, if you don't have to get it done and the weather is inclement, then you chill. But if you have to, whatever means you have to do it, get it done. See? Yeah. It's all good. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. That's right, timeforanawakening.com. Top of the page, you'll see podcast programs. Click on that. The drop down, you'll see African Perspectives, the first one. Click on that, and there will be programs that are dated. Entitled. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening. Ah, yeah. I didn't have my other sheet the other day, but I got it now. So African Perspectives, once again, is here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. On Mondays and Wednesdays, our story, Baba Wes Johnson, out of New Orleans, from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., Mondays and Wednesdays. Our story, Mondays and Wednesdays, from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., the host, Baba Wes Johnson, out of New Orleans. On Fridays, tonight at 8 p.m., Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. At 8 p.m. On Sunday at 5, from 5 to 6 p.m., Pinckney to Pinckney, activist Reverend Edward Pinckney from Benton Harbor, Michigan, is the host to Pinckney to Pinckney from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. on Sundays. And Sunday at 7, once again, Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. That's 215 490-9832. African Perspectives on the Motherland Media Network on Time for an Awakening and Black Talk Radio Network. Yeah. All right. I'm going to get into the Inyasa Sim and then get into the topic of today. And, of course, we're going to open it up for whatever you want to talk about on this last day of November 2024. Tomorrow's the last day, so Sunday's the first, and so Monday's the second. We'll be back with another program. And, of course, it's December. And, of course, you think, well, I know I do. I don't know y'all. I think y'all do, too. Y'all think of Kwanzaa. That's right. You prepare yourself for Kwanzaa, the 26th to the 31st, you know, to the 1st, really, to the 1st, yeah. 7 days, seven days of Kwanzaa. So we'll go over that. Try to get a hold of the brother out of New York to talk about Kwanzaa. I seen Sister Akina. I know, also too, Mama Nabantu. She's out the West Coast and knows a sister who very instrumental in helping to spread the word of Kwanzaa, especially after Dr. Malana Karinga was incapacitated for a bit. And so that's the thing, you know, even though Dr. Karinga created it, but it is something that is, it is ours. It is not his. Nobody owns it. It is ours. Kwanzaa is ours as African people. And we're still evolving with it and in it. So, right on. The Inyasa Sim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. November 28th. Only the African woman can say when and where I enter. In the quiet, undisputed dignity of my womanhood, without violence and without suing or special patronage, then and there, the whole African woman enters with me. Anna Julia Cooper. African women are timeless standards of decency, incomparable examples of motherhood, wholesome vessels of ma'at, poetic epitomes of beauty, consciously patient caregivers, infinitely intuitive power welders, self-respecting paradigms of femininity, transmitters of divine wisdom, life givers and sustainers of the first order, dynamic expressions flowing through art forms, knowingly perceptive comforters, nurturing Sankofian educators, righteously loving compliments, unrivaled communal balancing scales, and handicrafters. African women. Beautiful African women. Affirm, I appreciate the gifts of beauty, guidance, and dignity that African women bring. Affirm, I appreciate the beauty, guidance, and dignity that African women bring. Ashe. November 29th. Attention is the new currency. Chuck D. The attention which Chuck D is referring to is not of the natural kind which arises between men and women when they feel attracted to each other, between craftspeople and what they create with their hands, or between parents who love their children. Attention to which he is referring to is a negative one, one that disrupts the possibilities which innately lie in the persons, families, communities, and nations. It is one which divides us into things against each other. He is attempting to draw our attention, the acceleration of a very substantial, damaging trend in socialization and relationships, especially among our youth, though in no way limited to them, because regardless of age, babies cry for attention. He is speaking about the current childish, self-centered neediness for attention, which has progressed over the last few generations. The ease at which our children are controlled because of the weakness that spoilage brings in their willingness to honestly struggle for the individual elevated identity that they so desperately seek. He is asking us to see the disrespect so easily and readily given others while arrogantly expecting all others to hold them in esteem without having earned it. And finally, he wants to draw our active attention to the growing issue of self-esteem in our community, i.e. the measurement of one's self-worth based on external opinions and pressures. He is speaking about us becoming consumed by an alien, dehumanized, despiritualized, materialistic, focused way. Ashe. Affirm, I do not have an attention deficit. Affirm, I do not have.
This call may be recorded or transcribed.
Ashe. That's our brother. November 30th. The creator, Ra, lives by Ma'at and has established creation on Ma'at. Who is Ma'at? Who is she? Ma'at represents the very order which constitutes creation. Therefore, it is
said that Ra created the universe by putting Ma'at in the place of chaos. So creation in itself is Ma'at. Creation without order and chaos. Ma'at is profound teaching in reference to the nature of creation and the manner in which human conduct should be cultivated. It refers to a deep understanding of divinity and the manner in which virtuous qualities can be developed in the human heart, so as to come closer to the divine. Mu'ada Ashbi. We call on divinity and all the righteous warrior ancestors leading us to safely bring us home. We call on the courage manifest within them through a heartfelt and uncompromising effort to find and know the way to guide our thoughts, words, and deeds without ambiguity or trepidation towards sovereignty for our people, towards sovereignty for our people. We call on the love of all those who have created a sound path for us through doing this throughout our existence as a people, especially during the Ma'afa. We ask for forgiveness for our moral weaknesses and any errors in judgment which has led us to become distracted from our promise to be African. As we do this work, we seek your guidance and assistance in finding more ways to improve the quality of the character of our warriorship so that we can better be and serve Ma'at. Ashe. Amun Ra. Ma'at. Ashe. I am a microcosm of Ma'at. I am divine. Affirm. I am a microcosm of Ma'at. I am divine. Ashe, family. Ma'at. Yeah. Brothers and sisters, this is the day after Thanksgiving, properly known as Black Friday. Now, I've done, since I've been doing this program, and of course, I come on Wednesdays, and Fridays, and I've always had a Friday, or when Friday the 13th came around. And call that Black Friday. Understand the word black in the vernacular in America is very negative. Very negative. You know. And so, you know, I can't see that them doing something with the word black, knowing how they have portrayed it. That's just like the first Black Friday was in the 1860s, I believe it was, when these two Caucasians tried to corner the market on gold. It didn't work. And the stock market crashed, you know, and all kind of chaos ensued. So it didn't work. Then about 100 years later in Philadelphia, after Thanksgiving, many people came into the city to shop and to go to the Army-Navy game. Traffic was terrible. Police could not get that day off. Oh, also, too, Black Friday became something for businesses because the people wanted, you know, after Thanksgiving, getting, you know, drunk and meal and tired and everything like that, they didn't want to get up and go to work the next day. So some people did not go to work, and that caused some issues with productivity. So the issue of productivity, the issue of clogged streets, and also, too, thieving amongst us, American Africans, and Caucasians, too. Let's be real. When I first seen the piece, they didn't mention, they just said, and many black people coming into the city stores, or shop, you know, Philadelphia, and, you know, at Boston store, and at Gimbel's, you know, just much like New York, you know. And so, that's what they call Black Friday. Well, about 20 more years after that, about in the 80s, and particularly going into the 90s, the issue was to make a profit. on a ledger for the accounting, you don't want to see the red pen. You don't want to see red ink because that denotes a deficit. So you want it to be in the black. So what they did is they sensitized you into saying and understanding that Black Friday was about profit. We all know what has happened at some of these Black Friday openings. Chaos, fighting, people injured, storming, because, you know, the first one to get to these sales, and, you know, they waiting outside. Some of them, right after your meal, they open up. They started doing, usually they would open up before the business hours. Oh, no, we got to take advantage more so. So they opened up in the evening or late, 12 midnight, 1 o'clock. I don't know. It's crazy. I've never gone through that and, of course, never will. But, you know, many people have been hurt. Arguments ensue. I'm quite sure a few people have been shot, you know, over some of these material things, TVs, stereo equipment, the latest this or the latest that. So that's what Black Friday was about. You know, I mentioned earlier about Black Friday being on Friday the 13th, which, of course, is a very superstitious day that they deemed, you know. They have these superstitions. You can't break a mirror, you know, bad luck. Well, you have 40 days or 7 years of bad luck. Yeah, Stevie Wonder got a song like that, don't he? So very superstitious. 7 years of bad luck. Superstition is the way. And walking under a ladder, path being crossed by a black cat. So many other superstitions that, and so what we used to do in our community years ago, on that Friday, have a gathering of us, pretty much the conscious community, and everybody brings something, be over somebody's house. You know, maybe the next time Friday the 13th comes around, we'd be over another somebody's house. You know, spread it around. Everybody brings something. Do poetry, whatever your talent might be, singing, reciting something, whatever. You know, it's a good time. A very good time. Black Friday. Yeah. So, to, you know, for us, it's always something positive because it's black, right on. But like I said, you could not have had what you have now back then, because it would have been extremely in fact, when they had tried it, they called it Big Friday. Yeah, it was Big Friday, big shopping, Big Friday. And I don't, you know, that didn't catch on. They said it's hard to catch on. Why that Black Friday, the day after Thanksgiving, caught on? Because of the campaign. They kept pushing the idea. This is about you guys coming in, buying all the merchandise and so forth, so I can be in the black. So as the year ends, because I got all of this time from the day after Thanksgiving all the way to December 25th to make this money, to be in the black, you know, to have these, to have all these big sales and giveaways and so forth, to be in the black. Well, another piece on Black Friday, and I just heard this in the last, I'd say, decade or so, which has no validity as far as I'm concerned. If somebody has seen something documented, was during our captivity. The so-called captor would sell off some of his captives. That's right. So a deal. So, he ain't doing that good, I guess, on the plantation. Kind of hate that word. And he was going to sell off some of the captives, you know. a deal for those prospective buyers of humanity. So, you know, I don't know about that one. You know, maybe that's something they just threw into the mix, and you know. But the bottom line is, I don't give a damn what they do or what they say. It really doesn't apply to us who are trying to make, who are trying to develop some sanity in this insaneness, or trying to develop independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty in this insaneness. I got a haircut the other day, and one of the sisters who the barbershop is a member of ADOS. Now, I even told her, remember ADOS? So I even hate the acronym, Descendants of Slaves. But you know, of course, ADOS, their thing is they want reparations, but they only for American Africans. And they, in fact, they don't even like the word African. They don't claim to be African. You know, some of them claim that they're a different humanity because of, and also too mad at Africans because didn't know Africans come over here and come and get them. You know, yeah. So they're mad at them because of our existence here. And so we should be compensated, you know. As I was saying to her, I think that's a dead end there. Reparations? No. Not just because of Trump being the new president or the president again, but you see that amongst all, even progressive places. Like, whoa. The only place that I know, and rescue me if I'm wrong, that reparations have, it's not even reparations. They have a lawsuit in Evanston, Illinois, on redlining. They just show proof that their community and their property was devalued as opposed to all others, and they won a lawsuit. You know, they won a lawsuit. And I'm quite sure we have won a lawsuit, you know, too. We got to sue. We got to, you know, and what have we asked for all these many years, and John Conyers of Michigan, and I'm not sure who's doing it now. I think Sheila Jackson Lee, I think, is doing it now in terms of putting forth stronger reparations information and guidelines and bills to no avail, you know. Because one thing becomes very clear to me. I don't know about y'all, but very clear to me, based on particularly this recent election, they don't give a damn about us. They ain't going to give us no damn reparations. We have to sue them. And you know what, family? We have to sue them globally. This just ain't America. Now, we can pinpoint the fact that America's captivity of us was more evil and more destructive to us as opposed to the Caribbean. We can see that. Maybe other incidents. But from colonization, imprisonment, death, domination, and destruction that they have heaped upon us, we take our issue to the world court. Just like the European Jews did in Normandy against the Nazis and for what happened to them. Oh, Brother Oshie, they had plenty of proof. We got proof. We got proof of what they did. The history is there. I'm saying to do it globally because of how we all have been affected in former fashion. So we get money from England or whatever it is from England and France. Oh, France. France has got to pay, family. France. Germany. And some of these sons of bitches are still there in Namibia. The Germans are still there, family. The Indians are coming back into Uganda. So when we talk about reparations, and the root word of reparations is repair. We need to be repaired. We cannot repair ourselves with these people on our land. We cannot repair ourselves with us trying to be here on the land that they stole. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. So, family, it's a collective effort. It's a global effort. It's Africans welcoming Africans back home. It's Africans coming from the diaspora into Africa, willing to work, willing to do whatever it takes to help build and rebuild Africa. It's Africans getting all the sons of bitches out of Africa, the Koreans. I mean, when you look at the Chinese, okay, Brother Oshie, ain't the Chinese doing this, that, and the other? Yeah, but look at the mentality. Look what they have done. In fact, you know, when the Chinese come and build something, they don't use brothers and sisters within that community, within that city, whatever. They use prison, labor. I've seen it firsthand in the Bahamas. I've seen it firsthand. They're not going to use Africans that are there who are definitely able-bodied to build the roads, to build the whatever. They're not going to do it. So the hell with them. We can do it. That's the other issue. We can do it. And particularly American Africans. So when you have us here, particularly now that some of us are going to be out of some of these so-called black jobs. So when you have us here, you're saying, hey, let us here who have these skills, and we do. Because when they talk about DEI or whatever, and all the other programs, you know they got rid of affirmative action a long time ago. You know they got rid of all the other, quote, set-aside programs. Because Reconstruction, there's backlash. There's Caucasian backlash. They don't want equality. They don't want to share. They're selfish and greedy. That is not who they are. But yet we think that they're part of humanity because we feel that we're human and they're human. So there's some equality. There ain't no damn equality there. What is gentrification about? Retaking the cities that they left to live in suburbs, subdivisions, other counties, while still having to go into the cities to work. Well, I'm tired of that. I'm tired of that commute. Where I live here in Atlanta, huge area of being gentrified. Yeah. It's happening all around. So when they want to take back their stuff, sell it to them. Let's get ready to leave. I say all the time, and, you know, the Exodus, the Bible is not a history book, family. Let me repeat, the Bible, the King James Version, or any other Bible. I can't speak to the Ethiopian Bible, which is supposedly the oldest Bible in the world in Ethiopia. I can't speak to that. The one that we know has American Africans, particularly others, is the King James Version. We need to look at who was King James. And what did he do, you know, to write this Bible and interpret the languages that it was in? sometimes things, when you read it in a particular language, be it Greek, Hebrew, whatever, and then you interpret it, it becomes something different. Maybe your words are not the words of that, and it changes the meaning. It changes the direction. It's just like the letter J. The letter J didn't come into existence until the 16th century, the 1500s. The letter J. So how could there be Jesus, Judea, Jerusalem? I could go on. James, whatever. The letter J was not a letter in their alphabet. So how could that be? So we're going to deal with Black Friday. Yeah. And anything else you want to talk about, family? Anything else? I got a good brother on the line, Brother Muhammad. Good morning. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Osh.
Good morning, dear brother. Assalamu alaikum.
What's going on, man?
Oh, nothing much, man. I'm trying
You're talking about Black Friday?
Yeah. I've been talking about Black Friday every year for 10 years now. Adding a little.
Muhammad Ali said, you're a bad man.
Yeah.
Do you know how many people you fighting?
Yeah. Oh, man, please. For sure.
It's almost like you could say, it's me against the world.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, listen, I didn't even drop a turkey yesterday, and I definitely ain't doing Black Friday.
I know that's right. But that insanity.
It certainly is, Oshie. But listen, I have a question for you, Oshie. I just saw something that you posted on Facebook. You mind if I bring it up?
Yes, please do.
So it was a rhetorical question. I don't know if you got a response to it, but it basically said something to the effect of, and this is along the lines of what you're talking, because the people that you're referring to, this is these people. You said some people stole something from us, took our land, and then gave us a book.
Right.
That says thou shalt not
steal. Yes.
The irony in that is that the people that you're referring to are so calculating that they don't think you're talking about them.
Mm-hmm.
The people that took land in Africa and then carved it up and in some cases left and like, I don't need to be here. I can go back to Europe and this is going to still operate for me.
Sure.
And same people did that in America with us. I don't need to have these people in chains. I've done such a good job at this that these people going to go on serving, mm-hmm. you know, in the capacity that I had in mind when I brought them here. What represents my intentions that I don't really have to watch them anymore.
Right.
And I got a few overseers around.
Sure.
But my point is that these people don't view themselves as having stolen anything. And the people who read that particular passage, that's more geared towards you not violating somebody that's really kind of close to you.
Mm-hmm.
Or something in your community.
Right.
You know,
thou shalt not steal amongst yourself because you don't consider those who are outside of you applicable to that Bible, applicable to that religion, to that saying. You can steal from them all you want.
It goes for anybody.
Right.
It goes for anybody.
Mm-hmm.
That anybody, you know, and the reason why things are put in that, in that context or in places like what we call the Bible or the Quran or something else, you know, I saw something earlier today that said this is the oldest book that was ever written, and it has in the name, I don't remember the name of the individual, but it has the Hotep is in there, in the name. Mm-hmm. You may be familiar with the book, okay. I'm sorry, because I checked it. I said, okay, let me Google and see what is there, and it brought this book up. It's from Egypt.
Right, Ptah Hotep.
So, but, We don't come here with a set of instructions. You know, when a man and a woman mate and a child comes from that union, you know, they don't come with a set of instructions that, okay, tell them, you need to give this baby some breast milk, you know, because that's already built in. The mom's lactating.
Mm-hmm,
so, you know, you got a ready-made place to eat. So whoever designed this, if it was Allah, whoever, I'm not going to say Jesus, because the man only lived to be 33 years old 2,000 years ago, so I'm not going to put this on him. Whoever did this, put this in us.
Yeah.
Not only am I going to allow you to reproduce, but I'm going to put something in you that's going to let you the best first few food this child can eat.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to put that in you.
Right.
So there's something sacred about that. So I'm only saying, oh, see, sometimes I know when we do things, you know, we have good intentions, but you don't want to offend people who you're trying to get their attention.
Right.
It took me a long time to, you know, you witnessed some of that. I'll never forget, there was a brother who was running to be mayor of Milwaukee, an African-American brother.
Mm-hmm.
He was already sheriff. He comes. Mm-hmm. I think he came from Nebraska.
Right, Nebraska. Yeah, he came from Richard Artisan. He came from Omaha. Yeah.
Richard Artisan.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so we were standing in his campaign headquarters, and you said to me, he said, man, Brother William Muhammad from Muhammad's Temple Number 3, he's upset at you. He wants to talk to you. I said, really? He was standing right behind me. So I turned around. I said,
and there he was.
and I think I gave him my card and I invited him to come and talk to me.
Okay.
And he did. Mm-hmm. He came and talked to me because what his point was that he wanted to get across to me. And don't criticize Minister Farrakhan in public. And so used to be what he is.
Sure,
now,
right.
Then and now.
A defender.
Remember the nation of Islam.
Yeah, a defender of the faith of the nation of Islam, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Not getting ready to intimidate me, but everybody in my office where I worked was on tremor because he brought some FOI.
Oh, did he, man? Like, okay.
Oh, yeah, he came in. And so, but it was my boss on the job who was an ex-priest, Jack Murtaugh.
Mm-hmm.
Jack Murtaugh was a priest in Milwaukee, and he was married to a lady that was a nun.
Mm-hmm.
And they met each other at a retreat and responded to his name on the message board after she heard him speak. And they ended up getting together and committed fornication. I guess that's what priests aren't married, nuns aren't married. So I guess they fornicated, and they didn't put him out, but they gave him a lifetime job.
Okay.
He was director of the Interfaith Conference of Greater Milwaukee. I worked there when I was a community organizer back in the 90s. But when Minister William left, Jack Murtaugh pulled me to the side and he said, you know, Muhammad, he said, you never want to define yourself by who you are against. He said, because if that person changes, They're not going to remember what you said to them, but they're going to remember how you made them feel. Now he didn't give credit to who, because did you know who's credited with that statement?
Yeah, isn't that Maya Angelou? Maya Angelou.
Mm-hmm. Maya Angelou. He didn't say, but Maya Angelou said, but later
right.
It was years later. Let me see who said this statement that Jack Murtaugh said. Mm-hmm. But what he was trying to tell me is that. You know, Muhammad, your methodology, you might have good intentions, but your methodology is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still learning that.
Mm-hmm.
When I saw that, I said, oh man, I wonder who's going to respond to this because what would a person who is Christian read this, you know, why is he stepping on my religion?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's an art form that when I was studying the Islamic sciences, I ran into that again because I offended some people that were members of Warif Deen Muhammad's community. And the sheikh who was there that first class overheard me say, I asked him a question. He was from Sudan. His name is Jaffa Sheikh Idris. Really, really beautiful brother from Sudan, was a casualty of 9/11.
Mm.
He, a lot of the Muslims that were here and they documentation, the immigration status was, and he had been here for years. He had
right, and they deported him.
Yeah. Now, his sons are still here because they were born in Virginia or D.C., and but Jonathan Shaker III's out of here.
Okay.
But he said to me, I asked this question, what he thought. I said, what do you think about these people, Warazdin Muhammad and Louis Farrakhan and Elijah Muhammad, that, you know, say they represent Islam, but they... So he said, why do you call those people's names like that? He said, you don't have to call those people's names. He said, all you have to do is talk about what is correct Aqidah, the Arabic word, which means faith. He said, you talk about that, but you don't mention these people's names. There were people from Warazdin Muhammad's community in the class. There's about 125 of us from all over the country in Fairfax, Virginia. A lot of them guys didn't speak to me for about a week.
Okay.
Because I offended them.
Okay.
I offended them. And I didn't have the sense of thinking, oh, well, I have this information. I want, you know, I might have been showing off. I don't know. I'm a human being. But he basically, his correction was, you know, if you weren't trying to call somebody to something, and really, we, you know, Oshie, my daughter Amira is here. And I didn't eat with my family here yesterday for what they call Thanksgiving. It wasn't like a consciously aware decision that something happened. Well, no, I'm not going. But she's next door to me at my daughter Aziza's house.
Okay.
And from this point on, if you ride in the car with her, there's gonna be some jams. Nothing but Christmas.
Christmas.
Luther, Donny Hathaway.
That's the way. Yeah. I wonder if she's gonna have Curtis. Wonder if she's gonna have Curtis blow. That's my favorite.
She might. So this is something that, you know, I've been away from, other than, you know, here and there over the past 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I was 20 years old, I joined the nation. I stopped. I didn't even deal with Christmas before then because
right.
I had, you know, read Malcolm's autobiography, so I knew the whole thing behind the Christmas thing. But man, that is something that is more important to these people than their.
I tell you,
it's not part of their religion.
Yeah,
Santa Claus, Jesus wasn't born on December. They don't care that he wasn't born
That's
on
right.
December. You can read them the verse in the Bible. I've heard. Geno Jennings, the brother out of Philadelphia,
right?
Who, you know, I like Geno Jennings because he, but man, I don't know who he attracts a lot of people, but
sure.
A lot of people are not gonna follow because he steps on everything.
Mm-hmm.
The T.D. Jakes, he slams T.D. Jakes. He slams the brother in Atlanta where you are.
Yeah,
his cousin. What's the brother's name? Is Scandal. Jamal Bryant.
Jamal Bryant. Jamal Bryant.
Yeah.
And Eddie Long. And Eddie Long before him. And Creflo Dollar.
All of that. You know, Geno Jennings slams him, but he still engages in the Trinitarian doctrine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He talks about speaking in tongues. If I ever had a chance, I was like, brother, you got to explain that to me because there's no way that if that was really a language, it wouldn't be codified by now.
Mm-hmm.
The person just speaking, I mean, he makes fun at other people, like this Caucasian guy who speaks in tongues. I don't know his name, but he's one of those television people.
Right.
But he's still sanctioned. He sanctions eating pork. I don't know how you go against what's clearly written in the Old Testament, but that's between you and Paul.
Mm-hmm.
But I've kind of backed off unless kind of Oshie in the way that you when you had me to talk to Zion.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't just go in trying to convince Zion of anything.
Right.
First, I wanted to ask him, well, tell me what do you believe now? What's why you have it? And he said it so clearly and so intellectual. I was like, man, this young guy is sharp because he basically has something that a lot of people have quit, giving up on his curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just saying this, Oshie, you know, you my brother, I love you. And we want to call our people to the way that is correct.
Yes, Ashe. Yes, sir.
but we, you know, the methodology of doing it. And this comes up a lot when people talk about our brother Malcolm. They like to talk about the angry Malcolm, the by any means necessary, standing and looking out the window with a rifle in his hand after somebody, I think they tried to burn his house down or something. That is not the Malcolm that I don't even think Malcolm would want to remember, because, man, that just imagine the it's hard to have the feeling of what it'd be like for somebody to firebomb your house and throw something in the room where your children are sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot blame what anybody would say after that. And so I try not to measure the brother by the extremes that he had to endure. But like I love Brother Ossie Davis's eulogy.
Outstanding. Yes.
I think that if I want to remember Malcolm,
exactly.
And I think I said to you, Oshie, I gave the eulogy at my mother's funeral, but I never saw my mother dead.
Mm-hmm.
I saw my mother in hospice. That was enough for me.
I hear you.
So I thank all of my sisters and my nieces and nephews and children that held their hand during that. But, man, I did not want to see my mother. That's the most helpless I've ever felt in my life.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to talk about the things about my mother that I had experienced. I had nobody else to really talk about because I'm the oldest. And I wanted to talk about things at the time when she made me laugh. And so, mm-hmm. I love that eulogy by
Malcolm is outstanding.
By Ossie Davis.
Yeah.
Because he asked the question, did you ever see Malcolm smile?
Yeah.
Man, Malcolm had one of the most beautiful smiles, grins, whatever you want to call it, because nothing about him was simple.
Yeah.
But he wasn't a flamboyant individual.
At all.
And he was an individual that gave his all.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's sad. And this is a sad time of year, Oshie. And this day, I read something the other day that said that was given the scheme behind Black Friday that makes these people go and think they're getting a bargain on something, and all they've done is raise what the price would have been and then give them a price they ain't going no lower than this to make you think you're really getting a deal on something.
You know, I used to work at a clothing store back when I lived in Norfolk, Virginia. It was a clothing store where a lot of us would go to, and how they would mark stuff up, you know, and then mark stuff down to move that merchandise out, and you would think you were getting a deal, you know, because it's 25%, 30%, 40% off, you know. When it came into the store, it was this price, and it was double it, and then, you know, say if it came in at $15, they would double it, now it's 30, and then 15 more, you know, it's $45. Now it comes on sale to $30, and you think you got a deal now. You know what I'm saying? And that's how it is. And I'm quite sure that's how it is in other merchandising and how to market it so it can move, so the new stuff can come in and they can do the same thing. You know, it's a game. It is a game. And what Black Friday was about, and I said some things. I don't know if you heard me from the beginning of the broadcast, but I said some things about the origins of Black Fridays, you know, the real origin of Black Friday. One of them was when the stock market crashed. Because you and I both know, Muhammad, this society, the word black has such deep negative connotations to it. You know, it still does. The understanding became real for this Black Friday has a ability to make money or to be in the black in the accounting. So all that time you were losing money, but now right at the Christmas time when everybody's gift getting and gift giving, you know, here, right, the day after Thanksgiving begins Black Friday, not in a negative sense, because you don't want to be in the red. You want to be in the black. And so they started marketing that in the 80s. So this thing of Black Friday is not something that's been happening all the time. Even the past Black Fridays, one was Black Friday was supposed to be about our captivity. That on the Friday after Thanksgiving, that the Caucasian had to sell some of us off, you know, and so he had a sale of us, you know,
to try to break even and not go under.
Right. So had to sell off some of his captives. Yeah, you know, and people started talking about that, but there is no proof of that. There's no history on that, but they threw that in the mix. You know, one of the things they did, of course, is during the day after Thanksgiving in Philadelphia. That's where it really happened, because it was a Black Friday. It was so bad. The traffic was bad. The shopping was bad. They had the annual Army-Navy game in. So all of them people descended upon the city. The police couldn't get off and so forth, you know. And so they had to deal with it. And another thing was shoplifting. Not shopping, but shoplifting. And a lot of shoplifters, they believe was us. But, of course, you know, white folks shoplift too, of course, you know. But at that time, we're talking about the early 60s, you know. So these are the things they talk about when Black Friday. Now, of course, as I mentioned earlier broadcast, we flipped the script on Black Friday, basically using Friday the 13th as a Black Friday, where we in the community, Tate, you and I, and many others, we would go up to people's houses and and have potluck and do poetry and sing whatever your talent was, whatever you wanted to do, break a mirror, because it's about superstition. Friday the 13th, superstition. Break a mirror, walk under a ladder, or, you know, something like that, you know. But the thing is, this, you know, this Black Friday, and then, of course, the Black Friday has spawned other marketing days of Cyber Monday and Giving Tuesday and Small Business Saturday. You're supposed to shop at small businesses. You know, so, man.
Do you remember the Topographical Research Center?
Sure do, in Chicago, and also too in Milwaukee. Brother Tony Courtney and his brother Dia Damani.
So that's, and you know, I don't know, you know, how many people listening, you know, in our age range, you know, 70s, 60s. Mm-hmm. Who may have never heard of the Topographical Research Center, but it was infused with elements of Africa. I remember they had a drumming aspect to it. Mm-hmm. But the part that grabbed my attention was they would have this real large book. Mm-hmm. It was by Rand McNally.
Right. Exactly.
And what they were showing. They were showing all. It showed the level of. I guess you could say, in a sense, it was maybe another form of what they call now the GDP, but it had everything that was sold in America.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that they talked about was that you know, so for example, one of the things you ever heard of a guy named Edward Bernays?
Edward Bernays, yes. Psychologist. Mm-hmm.
He's Sigmund Freud's nephew.
Okay.
He wasn't a psychologist. He's more known. Most of the market schemes that they use in America in terms of selling stuff or making people think that you need this. Mm-hmm. You need to get a new car because after World War II and all of that industrials and all that stuff, the products weren't moving fast enough.
Right, so they did planned obsolescence. You know,
yeah.
That your shit is going to be breaking down. Yeah.
So that's what grabbed me, is the fact that, like, wow, nothing that these people do in this country is, like, neutral. There's a reason behind it. It's just that if you don't come in contact with the knowledge, then you're just going to be kind of like a worker in the I'm thinking of ants. You know, they have worker ants.
Right, right.
And then they have the queen ants that kind of lays back and kind of manages things, and that's trying to get our people out of that.
Mm-hmm.
That's a steep climb.
That's tough. You know, it is.
Yeah. That's a Steve Klein, right. Black Friday. These people do some things with color that you know, even color is not something that just benign.
Oh no! It's a purpose.
What they call color schemes.
Mm-hmm.
Black Friday.
Yeah.
It's like you say previously, very little in terms of calling something black is beautified or given any real significance.
No, not by the society, but that happened by us. We said black is beautiful. We said we began to talk about being black and being positive because of how the, you know, I listen to, you know, when I go on Facebook sometimes and I see Muhammad Ali, and, you know, I love Muhammad Ali. And so he's giving a discussion with a British interviewer, not David Frost, but another one. And the interviewer says he's a Negro. So, no, I'm black, you know, and, you know, not the Negro. He says everybody else, you know, the Chinese, you know, they're Chinese. In China, they're Chinese. In Japan, they're Japanese, you know. But anyway.
Well, it was poetic during the time when he was, you know, not excommunicated, when he was banned from boxing for 3 years. He went on speaking tour.
Yeah.
And he would be speaking to these on these college campuses and telling these people about the color scheme of, you know, the angel cake.
Right.
The angel is
devil
white.
Food.
Everything is white. Everything.
Yeah. Devil food,
you know,
cake.
Black
and
is
food.
Bad.
Yeah.
One brother recently threw it in. He said, "How come why do they call it the wild rice? Black rice? You know, the rice is black. They call it wild rice. They don't call the white rice." So these, you know, the color thing in this society.
It's
and
deep.
Of course, I just saw something just before I saw your piece, and I had to read the comments to know that this was Serena Williams. But it was a pit. It was supposedly, this is Serena Williams sitting on this Caucasian guy that she's married to's lap.
Yeah.
And when you look at the picture, her hair is blonde.
Yeah.
Her nose has been thick.
Yeah.
Her
skin
like,
is lightened.
Her complexion looks like Michael
Jackson. Oh, yeah.
Jackson.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, they showed a picture of how beautiful she looked when she was younger as she was emerging into her womanhood, you know, in the early parts of her tennis career, and you could see how she was developing, and then they showed that, and I'm like, damn, it's a stark difference, man. It's deep. But listen, I'm gonna take a break, brother. You just hold on, okay, brother Muhammad. I'm gonna take a break,
sure.
And you just hold on. All right, yeah. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on TimeForAnAwakening.com and BlackTalkRadioNetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under. Broken glass everywhere. People
On the stage, you know they just don't care. I can't take the smell, can't take the noise. Got no money to move out, I guess I got no choice. Rats in the front room, roaches in the back. Junkies in the alley with the baseball bat. I tried to get away, but I couldn't get far. Cause a man with a tow truck repossessed my car. Don't push me, cause I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under. Standing on the front stoop, hanging out the window, watching all the cars go by, roaring as the breezes blow. A crazy lady living in a bag, eating out of garbage pails, used to be a fag hag. Such a dance to tango, skipped the life and tango. A silk on princess seemed to lost her senses. Down at the peep show, watching all the creeps, so she could tell her stories to the girls back home. She went to the city and got so did it. She had to get a pimp, she couldn't make it on her own. Don't push me, cause I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. My brother's doing fast on my mother's TV. Says she watches too much, it's just not healthy. All my children in the daytime, Dallas at night. Can't even see the game or the Sugar Ray fight. The bill collectors, they ring my phone and scare my wife when I'm not home. Got a bum education, double-digit inflation. Can't take the train to the job, there's a strike at the station. Neon King Kong standing on my back, can't stop to turn around. Broke my sacroiliac, a mid-range migraine, cancer membrane. Sometimes I think I'm going insane, I swear I might hijack a plane. Don't push me, call, close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. My son said, Daddy, I don't want to go to school because the teacher's a jerk. He must think I'm a fool. And all the kids smoke reefer. I think it'd be cheaper if I just got a job, learn to be a street sweeper. I dance to the beat, shuffle my feet, wear a shirt and tie and run with the creeps. Because it's all about money, ain't a damn thing funny. You got to have a con in this land of milk and honey. They push that girl in front of the train, took her to the doctor, sewed her arm on the game. Stabbed that man right in his heart. Gave him a transplant for a brand new start. I can't walk through the park cause it's crazy after dark. Keep my hand on my gun cause they got me on the run. I feel like an outlaw, broke my last glass jaw. Hear them say, you want some more? Living on a seesaw. Don't push me cause I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. Say what? It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. A child is born with no state of mind, blind to the ways of mankind. God is smiling on you, but he's frowning too, because only God knows what you'll go through. You'll grow in the ghetto, living second rate, and your eyes will sing a song of deep hate. The places you play and where you stay looks like one great big alleyway. You'll admire all the number book takers, thugs, pimps, and pushers, and the big money makers. Driving big cars, spending 20s and 10s, and you want to grow up to be just like them. Smugglers, scramblers, burglars, gamblers, pickpocket peddlers, even panhandlers. You say I'm cool, I'm no fool, but then you wind up dropping out of high school. Now you're unemployed, all non-void, walking around like your pretty boy Floyd. Turn stick up kid, but look what you done did. Got sent up for an 8-year bid. Now your manhood is cooked and you're a Maytag. Spend the next 2 years as an undercover fag, being used and abused to serve like hell, till one day you was found hung dead in a cell. It was plain to see that your life was lost. You was cold and your body swung back and forth. But now your eyes sing the sad, sad song of how you live so fast and die so young. So don't push me, cause I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under.
Yo, Mel, you see that girl, man?
Yeah, man.
Yo, that sound like cowboy,
what's
man.
Up, fool?
Yo, what's up, money?
Yo.
Hey, where's Creel and Raheem, man?
Lay upstairs cooling out.
So what's up for tonight, y'all?
Yo, we can go down to the field, man.
We'll take out June, bro.
Hey, yo, you know that girl Betty?
Yeah, man.
My mom's got robbed, man.
Nah,
what? Yeah, she got hurt.
Oh, what is happening?
What's up? Free! Don't nobody move nothing. Y'all know what this is. Get him up.
What?
Get him up.
Yo, man, we down with Grandmaster the Flash and the Furious.
What is that, a gang?
Nah,
shut up. I don't hear you now.
Shut up.
So what's the problem?
Get up, you the problem.
You the problem.
Yo, you ain't got to push the car. Get in the car. Get in the car. Get in the car. Get in the car.
You are listening to Time For an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on Time For Awakening and Black Talk Radio Network. I'm talking today about Black Friday. I got my good brother, Brother Muhammad Abdullah with me. And bringing some perspective to it. I want to play a couple of pieces. And, you know, I always look for something to add to the conversation. Like I said, I've been talking about this particularly every day after Thanksgiving for 10 years since I've been on radio, trying to make sure that we have an understanding and perspective of it. Here's a piece right here, very short piece. And then I'm going to play a piece by Dr. Umar Infatunde.
When you think of Black Friday, you probably think of discounted prices, the long lineups, and the unofficial start of the holiday shopping season. But the term Black Friday, it wasn't always about shopping.
Black Friday is a term that's been in use for quite a long time to refer generally to negative events that happen to fall on a Friday.
That's Ben Zimmer. He's a language columnist for the Wall Street Journal. He says one of the big first usage of the term Black Friday was in 1869.
There were a couple of investors, Jay Gould and James Fisk, who tried to corner the gold market, and it led to a financial panic. And so that day in 1869 was called Black Friday.
There's no concrete evidence on who coined the term Black Friday, or when it even started being used to describe the day after U.S. Thanksgiving. But a lot of evidence points to the 1950s.
The very earliest example that's been found so far by a researcher named Bonnie Taylor Blake comes from a journal, a sort of a trade journal called Factory Management and Maintenance. And that goes back all the way to 1951. At the time, it refers to Black Friday as the day after Thanksgiving, but it has nothing to do with shopping at that point. In fact, back then, it has to do with worker absenteeism. Basically, factories had trouble getting their workers to show up on the day after Thanksgiving. If they got the Thursday off, then they would just want to take off the Friday as well.
This is Bonnie Taylor Blake, the researcher Ben was referring to. In her research, Bonnie writes that police in Philadelphia were referring to the days following Thanksgiving as Black Friday because they were considered the biggest shopping days. Not only that, Ben adds people descended into the city for the Army-Navy football game that happened on the Saturday.
Local police officers would refer to this day as Black Friday because it gave them so many headaches dealing with all of that traffic, both sort of foot traffic and car traffic, and police had to deal with all of that.
So when did Black Friday become the chaotic shopping scene we see today? Both Ben and Bonnie say that retailers and workers didn't like the negative connotation of the term Black Friday and even tried to rebrand it as Big Friday, but that didn't catch on. But a myth started circulating about the origin story of Black Friday, so retailers played into it.
There's a very common myth that has been in circulation since the 1980s, pretty much, that Black Friday actually refers to retail stores, retail companies become profitable. They go in the black, and that's why they're called Black Fridays.
So thanks to that myth, retailers were able to put a positive spin on the term and reinvent it to the Black Friday we see today.
And it's been so successful that we see online retailers trying to spin off Black Friday into other shopping days. So there's Cyber Monday, for instance.
Regardless of its origins, Black Friday is now a popular day for retailers.
Black people are still not yet convinced that America wants to free herself of them. See, when you go outside next Friday on so-called Black Friday, it'll be White Friday because all the money go to white people, which you know began in Philadelphia, Bobby Davis.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. Black Friday the day after Thanksgiving to kick off the holiday shopping season began in Philadelphia. And guess what the term came from?
Did the money for black people?
No. Check this out. It came from the police. The Philadelphia Police Department. And the reason they called it Black Friday is because they said that this is the day that black people are going to go out acting like they're shopping, but they're really going to be stealing. So we have to put more police out on the streets on that day after Thanksgiving to catch all the black thieves who are going to be trying to steal from the good white people and from the good white department stores.
Oh, I never heard
it
that
was
one.
It was actually derogatory.
Wow.
And it came from the police. Black Friday was about putting more police on the streets to catch more black thieves who would be stealing during the holiday shopping. That's where Black Friday came from, and it came from Philadelphia.
Well, then they want to try to change the narrative, saying that Black Friday means that's when businesses go into the black because they make so much money at that time.
Nah. Now, I'm not going to say that that's not a accurate narrative, but that's not the origin.
All right.
That came later.
Okay.
Black Friday was about making sure there was enough police out there to catch any black person who was trying to steal.
So they should have called it Blue Friday.
Absolutely, they should have called it Blue Friday. But when you see black people out there shopping on Friday, that is zombie land.
Yes.
What's the show on TV where it's always zombie?
The Walking Dead.
Black Friday is a Walking Dead. I wish I could take a bullhorn, Bobby David, outside and talk to all black people in America on Black Friday. I just wish my voice could project to all 50 million American Africans in these 50 states, because I want to ask them, what are you doing this for? Why are you buying video games when your son is in special ed? I don't understand.
Mm.
Why are video games being purchased for a home that has children who can't read on grade level?
Mm.
I don't get that. Why are you buying pocketbooks and Air Jordans when you don't even have a trust fund for your child or life insurance for your child or college savings plans for your child? And more importantly, because a lot of black people will say, I have all that. Well, we ain't got no hospitals. We got very few independent schools. We ain't got no supermarkets. We got very few revolutionary grassroots banks. Most of the black banks we call black banks are really black people fronting white banks. And the ones that are truly black are capitalist-minded. They're not investing in the black community. They're robbing and raping it. So when you look at the money that we waste on Black Friday, in Philadelphia we'll spend about $3 million. The Delaware Valley will spend about $3 billion. On Christmas gifts. This is no small price tag, even in the post-COVID age. Like I say all the time, Bobby David, black people could take their Christmas money and create independence, create a black. We keep talking about Black Wall Street. Well, guess where the money is for Black Wall Street in every city in America? It's at the Black Friday Shopping Center. If New York City took their Black Friday money, if Philadelphia took their Black Friday money, if Baltimore took the Black Friday money, Houston, Dallas, L.A., Atlanta, Durham, North Carolina, all these places, Chicago, Detroit, Milwaukee, if black people just took the Black Friday shopping money and sacrificed it for 1 year, Bobby David, we could build an independent black community with the four essential institutions in every city.
That's right.
We don't want to be free, and we are not ready to be free, because freedom means responsibility and accountability to each other. RNA, responsibility and accountability to one another. And black people are not the least bit interested in being responsible or accountable to other black folks.
Well, let me take this caller before I have some more questions. Good evening, caller. Welcome to New Worldview. What's your first name? Where are you calling from?
This is Dwayne calling from Southwest Philadelphia.
Okay. How you doing today?
I'm doing all right. How about yourself?
I'm good and wonderful.
Yes, everything he said is true. You're going to get this fight of putting your money together. I keep calling up telling people, you're not going to get this by prayer. Prayer is not going to get you quite nowhere. You're going to get this by getting up and doing something, like opening up a business and stuff like that. And other than that, you're not going to get it.
Well, wait a minute. Before you get any further, I think that it depends upon who you pray it to. Might make a difference.
Praying that God's not going to, he's not going to interfere with this stuff. Yes, I believe in God, but he's not going to interfere with this stuff. What's going on? You see, he's not doing it. He ain't did it over 400 years. So that's what I mean.
Because I think you're both correct. The problem is black people don't understand the mechanics of prayer.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by the mechanics of prayer, when you pray, you don't pray for problems to get solved. Because prayer does not provide solutions. What prayer does is it opens up a spiritual vortex that allows you to find the solution yourself. When you ask God to help you with a problem, God will put in motion a series of mechanical operations designed to allow you to find your way to that solution. But the prayer itself does not find the solution, and that's where black people go wrong, because we think we just pray and the solution falls in front of us. The problem is solved through the prayer. The problem is solved through the prayer. To create the opportunity for you to find the solution yourself, you still have to do the work. And the problem with Negroes is we pray, failing to realize that in order for prayer to be actualized, magnetized, you still have to do the work yourself.
All right, caller, you have some more comments, caller?
That's the part I'm talking about. A person got to get up and do something.
That's true.
Yeah, it's not gonna come. You're praying for a job. You got to get up there and look for a job. It's not gonna. Things not gonna come to this on your lap, sitting down.
Mm-mm.
You gotta get up and do something. All right, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much for participating in the show.
Yeah, that was Dr. Umar Ifatunde. And I'll tell you, he's right. It's not gonna just drop out there. You gotta put action, you know? Ain't that right, Muhammad?
Absolutely, and most books of prayer say the same thing. I believe this is in the Bible. It says prayer without works is dead.
Right.
But mm-hmm. then it comes down to how do you define work? And if somebody else is you know riding your back when it comes to the work, then it doesn't really work for you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Some people have the idea of every religion has some aspect, ties or whatever the case. I think it's criminal for a person to, pastor, whatever they call themselves, to take money and ties from people who are just receiving public benefit or child support.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the understanding of, you know, where you, what your obligation is and what your, you know, what has to work. And you know, Umar Johnson is correct. Prayer is really something, you know, I see people all times, oh, she, and I wrote it, and then I said, no, I'm not going to post this. I'm going to get upset. But, like, and I see Muslims and Christians doing this. Posting a prayer on Facebook, now I don't mean wishing somebody well, but I see people actually putting prayers on Facebook. That's not going to work for you because mm-hmm. there's a verse in the Quran where Allah says, call on me and I will answer you. You ain't got to go through nobody. You ain't got to go through no priest. You ain't got to go through nobody. Just come and the process of doing that, if it's done, like Omar said, you know, the mechanics, there's certain mechanics depending upon what faith of belief you're involved in, but pretty much you have to get on your knees and then you got to get up.
Got to get up. That's the point. That's it.
You got to get up and you got to go to work. Same thing for knowledge. Mm-hmm. Knowledge without action
right.
is mute. You have to go and spread what you're learning. I have a young student now he's actually Mark Wade. I don't know if you noticed, Mark Wade has a sister who is Muslim.
Okay.
She's been Muslim for some years, but I know her. But I was at mother's house and we had sat down and really talked for the first time, because when you're at the masjid, you know, you don't really interact with women that you're not really, you know, you can say assalamu alaikum and how you doing, sister, and few words, and then you move on.
Yeah, but you don't engage in any kind of conversation. That's
not
yeah.
No, not typically.
Not in the mosque. Not in the mosque, for sure. Yeah.
Definitely not. And in some cases, not outside.
Yeah, not even outside.
But she started, getting questions from me, asking me questions, and we've sort of developed, so she's kind of become a student. And what I'm trying to encourage her is, okay, now in order for you to really benefit from this, you're going to have to teach it to somebody else. If you learn something and you don't spread it, then you're not really benefiting from it. Mm-hmm. How you make, you know, nurture your own seed and what's planted in you, you have to give it to somebody else.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's the other side of the Black Friday and the whole Christmas schema is when you look at Ocean, all of us, I think everybody within the sound of our voices can recognize how much heartbreak comes along this time of the year.
Oh, man. Serious. So serious.
The one thing, I'm sure there's a lot of different, because you mentioned the origin of a Black Friday. There's probably a lot of different origins because, you know, and when you move out through America, the different regions, things happen sometimes at the same time differently. Mm-hmm. Civil rights movement in the South was not the civil rights movement in the urban North. You know, we wanted to fight back. They was talking about, you know, turn the other cheek. We wasn't really down with that. But clearly, when you look at the number of people who go to jail just around the holiday of either trying to get something ill-gotten or they got a habit or something and they're going out doing this, and then they other people that a lot of people who go to church and are religious, go to the masjid, you buying stuff from people you know is stolen. So there's a whole mentality that has developed around this that is terrible. I just found this out day before yesterday, Oshi, that in Wisconsin, I don't know if this is around the country, but in Wisconsin, from Thanksgiving Day up until tomorrow sometime, today or tomorrow sometime, I think it's sometime today, they have a almost like what you see when they're getting ready to do a drug raid. They do that on the evening of Thanksgiving because they say more people drive drunk on the evening and night of Thanksgiving going into the next day than any other time of the year. I don't know if that's a Wisconsin thing, but I never heard of it. But it's just amazing how so much of what is sacred or people worship or practice in this country has just elements of it that are just so destructive, especially when it comes to our people.
Yeah, well, you know, yeah, I'm quite sure they're going to catch a whole bunch of folks, you know. Yeah, that's the holiday, the high holy days for you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And don't even talk about the fact, Oshi, that, you know, all this is leading up to December 25th.
That's right.
Which has nothing to do with Jesus.
Right.
Even in their own book, if you read it,
right,
you can tell Jesus was not born on December 25th because the way they're describing the environment around when he was born,
right,
it couldn't have been in the wintertime.
Mm-hmm.
But people that are born doing this or have brought up with this, my grandson, my daughter, my oldest daughter's son, smart as I don't know what. Mm-hmm. He came over to my house and saw all these books and documentaries, and he was asking me, that could he have one? And I was saying, well, young man, you know, I'm old and I'm a collector.
Mm-hmm.
But you're in the age. Your mom doesn't even own a DVD player or a CD player.
I'm here.
And I kept saying, well, maybe if you, okay, I'll give you the, he wanted me to give him the DVD Wiz and Motown 25.
Okay.
And the Jeffersons. He wanted to learn about the Jeffersons. I said, listen, we'll talk to mom and maybe she'll buy you a DVD player. He said, no, Santa, because anything that I want, I can get anything I want if I ask Santa for it. And I thought, man.
Oh, wow.
This is my grandchild saying this.
Wow. And believing
it. You know.
And believing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, for many children, particularly of our children and all children in Western society, Santa Claus, Saint Nick, all of them, parents have lied consistently because they want this myth and then their children to be happy about that situation happening for them. I mean, I remember as a kid, I never put out cookies and milk and that kind of bull. You know, we didn't have none to spare. I'd ate the shit myself.
For real?
Yeah, you know, but there was that belief was there up until the time you are 10, 11, and you know better, you know, maybe even before then. Well, yeah, you know it's a myth.
By the time I was about 6 or 7.
Yeah.
It was yep. Over for me after that.
Yeah.
It's like somebody's waking you up. You know you got to go somewhere, and somebody's waking you up, and you're in this deep sleep. You don't want to come out of that sleep, but once you come out, you can't go back to sleep now.
Mm-hmm.
Once you know that lie, but people still continue to participate in it, because what? It has some material gain. They're going to
big time.
Something.
Yeah, big time. You know, probably that one year. But probably that one year, I didn't get what I wanted. You know, really turned me off.
That's reality. That or you know, imagine the Kennedy household. They come together around Christmas. They got all these tragic figures: Robert F. Kennedy Jr., heroin addict, Senator Ed Kennedy. You know, might have killed a woman.
Right, Chappaquiddick. Yeah.
But are you supposed to get through Thanksgiving and Christmas and push all this stuff to the side?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah. Well, you know, I look at Caucasians being able to do that because I think collectively they suffer from cognitive dissonance, firmly put into their mind, you know, that they are who they feel and say that they are, and nothing could be furthest from the truth. But that is their truth. And so even though you provide evidence, I mean, concrete evidence is dismissed, it's ignored, you know, and because they're going to continue to do what they are going to do. And that's our problem. We believe that they can be educated or they can be taught or they can be exposed to the truth and they'll capitulate. No, that's not going to happen, you know. And everything that is designed for them in their favor. The religion, the government, the businesses, everything.
They're too invested in it.
Yeah.
They, you know, you're talking about in the 90s, Oshi, when I was a community organizer, it was a lot of prominent programs that included what they call healing racism curriculum.
Right.
And you would have these Caucasians acknowledging racism, but they were it was designed for them to do it amongst their own people.
Mm-hmm.
We'll educate our African American people about this. You educate because
right
they gonna accept it better coming from you and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
But in many cases, I would ask the question, it would bust the bubble. I was like, listen, you know what would really change a lot of this or make it speed up? If y'all would just give up some of what y'all got too much shit. y'all got acres and acres of land. One person owns all of this.
Yeah.
That's what we need. We need a shake up of this, but, you know, then you would see the look on their face like, well, we really didn't.
No. No, there is. Right. There is no intention ever of sharing. Of sharing. No intention ever of dealing with and working towards some kind of equality. None of that. And this last election and what they're talking about in the 2025 project and all the other things that Trump's cabinet is talking about and designing to do shows you that they don't give a damn about you. They hate us. They always have. And they always will. And, we keep thinking that somehow our suffering is it redemptive and that we can expose them and they have a feeling. Oh, I'm so sorry about what I done. Come on, guys. Come on. Yes, let's just share. No, hell no. Shut the. You know. But listen, I got some callers. I want to get to some callers, Brother Muhammad.
Go ahead, Oshie, always good. I got to get to a dentist appointment.
Okay, dear brother.
Okay, always good, my brother. Assalamu alaikum.
Walaikum assalam. Brother Paul, what's happening?
Good afternoon, Baba Oshie. How are you today?
I'm doing well. What's happening with you?
Yeah, live and kicking, giving thanks for life always, Baba
right on.
Oshie.
Right on.
Absolutely. Yeah, some good information you give us on Black Friday. Some interesting information. I for one, I've never gone to any of those promotions. I think it's kind of exploitative, and a lot of the things what you've said and the information you've given, I absolutely accept, and I know that's the reason why I haven't been.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, the reality of it is that these people, they're in control of a great deal of our minds, and that's how they. It's a lot of psychology going on.
Yeah,
a lot of hoodwinking, a lot of sleight of hand tricks, and that is basically that sums it up for me. Is the order of the day what they do in terms of the promotions, which they label Black Friday, is no different to what the politricians do every day of the week, as far as I'm concerned.
The politricians. Okay.
That's what I call them, that's my term for them, because to me, they just come with their magic tricks, a bag of maggot tricks in the circus, and then they make what people call promises. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, there's a saying which says a promise is a comfort to a fool. Have you ever heard that?
No, I haven't. A promise is a comfort to a fool. No, I haven't.
Right. Yeah. So, meaning that if someone makes you a promise, right, you know, unless you're a fool, you better do your due diligence
exactly. And
make sure that they can keep the promise.
And they can keep
you
the
understand?
Promise.
But,
exactly.
Yeah. But most times people don't, because they talk about trust. And trust is nonsense, as far as I'm concerned. Trust doesn't offer you any intelligence. If you're intelligent, intelligence is information. Mm-hmm. So an intelligent person seeks information. It just doesn't just go on what somebody says. Or
right.
It doesn't matter who it is, whether
right.
it be the government, it be whoever. You use your intelligence, your integrity to go and find out, research. The first thing you do is ask the person questions. You know, the sad thing is, in our community, a lot of the time people don't like questions. When you start questioning them, you see how quick their whatever they're telling you breaks down. And that's my life story. And I'm sad to say that, even with family, because I've always asked questions. Them questions, even in school, used to get me in trouble. But the moment I realized that these people didn't know what they were talking about, I couldn't accept no information. And you can't be a teacher, and I'm asking you a simple question, and you're telling me, and you don't even know that. And you want to teach me. How's that possible?
Mm-hmm.
That was always my problem, and that's always been my problem. You cannot be telling me something if you don't really know what you're talking about. You know what I mean? And that's how they got us. And religion is the religion. I think Karl Marx said this. Religion is the
opium
of the
people. Yeah,
you know,
opium of the people. Yeah.
Yeah, of the people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I didn't really pay much attention to that, but today I see it clearly. Of course it is. It dopes them up. They talk about hope. Hope. If you change the word H from hope, you turn it to dope. And what does dope do? Give you hope. It makes you high.
Yeah.
You understand? And when you're high, you have all these type of thinking, and then someday you're going to come down to reality and realize you're just high.
Yeah.
You're just hoping.
And
you understand?
And
so,
when you come down, you'll be in despair, because all the things that
you've been in despair.
Hope for it.
Absolutely.
Not come to fruition. Yeah.
You'd be in despair because nothing's appeared.
Yeah.
That's the reality. That is the reality of this thing, Baba Oshie. And today, right, you know, I'm listening to you, and I'm hearing Black Friday. Yeah, and you know what runs through my mind? I'm saying, you know, I sent you something on this missile Putin used to this missile, which I knew about 5 years ago. He warned about this, and
he used it?
Expert talk about. No, 5 years ago, because I used to watch RT. I don't know if you watch RT.
Okay.
This it's like Al Jazeera, but it's Russian based. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And he, on that 5 years ago, he was talking about this, and I'm watching this. A friend of mine sent me this American professor. This American professor saying he knows about it, and he's saying, well, he's saying the authorities don't really know what they're talking about, according to this American professor, because they're saying American authorities are saying. there's nothing to worry about. And this professor saying there is a lot to worry about because he feels that they didn't know that he had this technology. What it is, okay. They send this missile up in the atmosphere and then it just comes down out the sky, basically, the speed of it and everything. Yeah. Look, I've been saying this for time. My man is not playing. He ain't playing. This is not no play day. And I'm thinking, Black Friday, listen, man, we ain't going to see. If we don't wake up and take back and start speaking out and take back from these lunatics, we ain't going to even, there's going to be no world for us. I mean, Black Friday, listen, man, we ain't going to be, you know, Putin is not playing. This is not play day, no cowboy film or no whatever America thinks what it is. This is not a joke. He's not playing.
Yeah,
he ain't playing. 5 years ago, I saw him. They sent a missile, hypersonic missile, around the world. I didn't even know that could happen. He was talking about it, yeah. And when I went on the internet and checked it, you had two generals in America say they didn't know he had this technology. I'm thinking, what, you didn't know with all these spies and all this information?
Right.
You did not know that.
Yeah.
How can you not know that?
Talking about, I heard something to that effect that he has some armament, some missiles that are different than all the ballistic missiles that have been in the past, the recent past of the last 10, 20 years. And I'm saying, really?
But the thing is, Baba Ochi, why I say you can't accept nothing these people tell you. Because I watched it 5 years ago. He came and talked about it. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, what do you mean they didn't know about it? So they must be lying. I'm saying they come in and say that in public, but they're lying. Mm-hmm. What are they really saying? Because remember, Russia was the first to put a satellite in the sky, you know, Sputnik. It was the first. It wasn't America, it was Russia. Right. And then after that, then they realized, hey, then they made some fake loom. Look, I'm just going to say it as it is. It's a fake moon landing. No one went to no damn moon. They did that for propaganda reasons because Russia was far ahead of them.
Right.
And since that time, they've still been far ahead of them, America. Mm-hmm. Far.
Yeah.
And that's the reality of this thing. So most of what we're hearing and seeing is just propaganda. And what I'm saying is, we are in serious trouble if we don't wake up and pay attention. And look, the reality is, we're not. Man, talk, look, Baba Osh, I'm going to say, imagine, as a people today, I'm just going to say it as it is, and no one's going to like this. Imagine, as people today, so-called African people or black people, whoever you want to call yourself, we're talking about God, you know, God. And people are going to have a problem with what I'm saying here because they're going to say, do you not believe in God? Listen, I ain't in no hocus pocus. I'm in realness. Right. And we are men. We're supposed to be standing up like men, but we're like children today. That's the truth. Yeah. We as black men are like working children. I sit down and think to myself, I can't think of one leader today. You can think, well, oh, yeah, he's talking on our behalf. He's saying something that makes sense.
Right. I agree with you.
Not one.
Especially here. I don't know about the UK or anywhere in the continent. Especially here.
Africa, anywhere on the planet, there's not one. You know what? I go back and think. Even what I know about Jesse Jackson, even what I know about that man, I know a lot because I've been listening a lot. I know. Even I have, even that man in his time stood up. He stood up.
Yeah.
But today, I'm saying to myself, what's happened? We're supposed to have more education. We're supposed to have more money, but we're worse than children. I'm just saying as it is. We are worse. We are an embarrassment to the world.
Yeah.
That's what we are. We're going to let these people destroy the world in our silence. And we'll be talking about shopping. We'll be talking about God and Jesus and Muhammad and all this nonsense. And the world is going to go to hell because we are useless today.
Yeah.
I know people ain't going to like that. People are going to say, who is he talking about? Look at him and he's emotional and all this crap. But that's the reality.
That's the reality, man.
Every day I think,
that's the reality.
Who has really got our back? Who is standing up? In Africa, what weapons have they got to defend themselves? These people have weapons beyond our imagination. They can take us out any time. And we're talking about the Three Kings. Them Three Kings will be taken out in seconds because they ain't got nothing to defend themselves. Mm-hmm. That's the reality of it.
Yeah.
But I'm not in this imagination, this fantasy, hocus pocus nonsense anymore because I've woken up long time ago.
I say.
We need
too,
men. We need real men with substance
who
are prepared to stand up. Look, to be honest with you, there are women out there now, really. Black women out there.
They're stronger than men.
Seem to have a bigger backbone than the men.
Exactly. They're stronger than men. Yes.
I've been seeing this for a long time. I'm thinking, what the hell is going on?
I look at Congress. The strongest voices in opposition women, particularly the black women.
It's frightening. It's fearful black women. And it's true. I've been saying this on this side of the pond for ages, and I've been getting shouting down. People talking like I ain't talking no sense. But I've been watching it and thinking, how can this be? How can this be? Yesterday, I saw a black man walking along the street here with his hair straightened like a woman with long fingernails, a black man with a beard, everything here. I said to my... And I'm in a community, right? It was majority Indians. They own all the shops, the supermarket, everything. I'm watching this black man walking in this community with long, straight hair, with wink, and talking like a woman. I'm like, my God, we are in trouble.
Yeah.
We are so... And I know that's just one person, but that is representative of what they've done to us.
Yeah, that's endemic to a lot of us. Well, I'm going to catch another call, Brother Paul. You want to hang on?
All right, Baba OG. All right,
thank you, dear brother. Good afternoon.
Yo, what's popping?
Hey, what's up? What's up, Jay?
How was your misgiving today?
Oh, Day of Misgivings was a good day, man, for me and my family, man.
Hold on.
It was good to see.
Hey, put me on hold. I got a call coming in.
All right, brother. Yeah, it was a good day. And as I said earlier about the Day of Misgivings, that when you bring your family together, hope that is in peace. Hope that you all share that meal and enjoy that meal, but more importantly, the company, as you talk to each other and, you know, think about reminiscing about your youth, but more importantly, even up for your future, you know, when you got children, you know, when you see all the, there was no children, everybody in my gathering, everybody, well, I guess my nephew, his son, he's, ninth grade, but my grandson is 11th grade. No, he's 8th grade. My grandson is 11th grade. So, they're still children. But, I mean, that's the deal. You know, when you have lived a life for an extended period of time, now, you know, I don't deal with the Bible, but what does that say? How much life are you supposed to get? 70. A score is 20. A score is 20. So 70, that's 60 plus 10, 70 years, supposedly. And so,
you past that?
I'm past that, brother. A few years.
So you won the game, right?
Yeah,
well. you done outlived what this devil done set in place for you to live.
Right.
You know what I mean? The game now is about teaching the baby.
Yeah,
you know
right.
what I mean? Because to be honest with you, for us that have been a part of the glory, the last black glory, is basically a wrap.
Yeah.
See, the mistake that we made is that the teachers didn't lay the foundation the way they should have so we could continue our fight against the oppressor.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they knew how bad this oppressor is, but hey, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, they don't realize it.
No, man.
But look,
yeah.
The bottom line is, hold on one second. Yes?
All right. Yeah, we only have much time. We got a few more minutes left. So if you want to jump in, give us a call at.
Right. Sorry about that, man. I got business calls happening, man.
Man, you got a lot of business to take care of.
Trying to become rich.
Yeah, trying to take care of a lot of business, Jay.
I'm trying to make some money off of the new Trump economy that's going to come into place that's going to be a disaster.
Well. The thing about the new Trump economy is that you have to have serious money coming into it and to be able to take advantage of the tax breaks that you're going to receive and the movement of capital that you can do because you got some money. Now, if your ass coming in marginalized, you'll be further marginalized. In fact, you might even be destitute. You know.
I'm not even gonna lie to you, man. Since he's been elected, I've made some real, real good money in the market. The question is it gonna last? You know what
we'll
I
see.
Mean? I mean,
we'll
you
see.
Know, when I always tell people, if you're in the market, you could make some money strategically for a short period of time, depending on the wave of what's going on.
Well,
like
I mean, the idea of the market is the idea of the market has always been, I guess, you know, buy low and sell high.
I mean,
buy low
and
sell high.
No. There's certain things I've made just as much money going short on. But the thing is, it's a lot to me about timing. Now, the good thing about him is capital gains. I mean, capital gains is gonna be nice if he gives them another cut, if he lower it, you know, again, which more than likely will happen. But the reality on for everyday people, like you just said, it's not gonna be good, I don't think. I mean, the thing is, they're scaring you now in a lot of ways. It's like my aunt is on disability, and she was telling me how she was concerned about, you know, maybe her benefits being cut because, unfortunately, her worthless kids don't take care of her, so I got to foot the bill for it. I don't mind. But the thing is, I was saying to her, those are basically scare tactics to get you to have other things taken away from you. They basically can justify that doing it, I believe, if a recession is going to be in the cards based on his whole situation with the tariffs. I mean, that wiser heads prevail with no tariffs.
Well, the bottom line is hopefully there's somebody in his cabinet, particularly financial, that can explain to his ass how this is going to really hurt consumers. Because not even so forth about, okay, I buy from China. I'm going to pay more for what I bought from China, but I'm going to pass that, what I paid more, on to you, the consumer. And that's how this shit works. See?
No question. But the consumer doesn't understand that. That's the tragedy. Because think about it. I'm now convinced more than ever from just listening to people talk. These dumbasses really think they're going to get a check from this man in some form of a stimulus check or a PPP check or something like that.
Right.
That's why a lot of them thought about and did vote for him, because they're under that delusion that they're going to get a check. But what they don't realize is they're going to be paying more and more and not getting any type of help in regards to anything with this clown being office. See, when they realize 6-7 months from now that they paying more for everything, they're not getting no type of help or assistance and benefits, they're going to be like, oh, sugar, honey, iced tea. Because I can't see it happening any other way. What is he going to do for me and you, O? What is he going to do? Why was he going to lower prices? See, these are the questions that, unfortunately, because most Americans don't understand economics and are dumbasses, they fall for the banana in the tailpipe. That's what they fell for. And I mean, I'm going to make money in it, because the only reason I'm going to make money is because I have money. But if I didn't have any money, I couldn't make no money.
And that's the point I made.
And I'll be in a more position of, like my aunt, having to worry about things that are not necessarily things that you should be worrying about in this society. And mind you, there gonna be more white people suffering than me and you. But you know what the thing is, they don't care, because they want to preserve whiteness.
Right.
That's what it's all about.
It's just like
enough whiteness hurting themselves to keep me and you, as they say, black asses, from having anything. And why would you see? That's the mentality of the country, man. It's a sick mentality. You would hurt yourself to keep people who love your white ass more than they love their own black ass. You would hurt a people who love you, worship you, want to protect you more than you want to protect your own goddamn ass. Mm-hmm. That's the sickness. Black people don't want to hurt white people. That's the myth that this world gives out. Black people love white people more than they love their God. Because if they didn't love white people more than they love their God, we would have killed all those bastards years ago.
Yeah.
That's what Dr. Clark was talking about. Dr. Bing. They were all trying to tell us that the greatest thing you could study in this world is Amos Wilson.
Yeah.
To deal with the psychology of the Negro regards the white man. We love the white man. We'll die for the white man.
We've been trained to.
Hey.
And everything that they have done, even how evil they have been, they use the trichnology and whatever methods that they formulated in to continue to fool our ass. You know?
It's sad. All I can say to you is this, it's insane to be in a situation that we are in as an African people based on our love for who has oppressed us.
Mm-hmm.
If we stop loving the white man, we would be in a way better predicament. Everything, it seems that the white man has, the Negro won.
Yep.
He won his woman. He won his wealth. He won everything, man, instead of wanting something that is your own. Imagine if we would get rid of all of the white people out of Africa. Africa would be no better.
It all depends.
Our minds are at the point where as we want to serve the interests of the white man and protect that no good, filthy, stinking bastard, when we should be killing his ass every minute of the day for what he's done to us as the African people. And would it be better? Nah, in all honesty, wouldn't be better, because you know why? The white man got us on remote control.
Brother. Listen, Jay. You know, it's that clock on the wall. Listen, you have a good weekend, brother. All right.
Hey, man, you know what I'm doing this weekend, man? I'm going to see Gladiator.
Okay.
And watch Denzel with the missus.
All right.
Suppress his homosexuality, from what I just said.
Yeah, okay.
Talk to you later.
All right, brother. Peace to you.
All right.
Good afternoon. Hello? Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yes. How you doing?
Okay. I'm just listening in.
Well, I'm glad you're doing. You're at the end of the program.
I am so sorry.
No, that's okay. That's okay. We're on Benton Harbor. That's Eastern time, isn't it? Or is it Central?
Yes, sir.
It's Eastern, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so we're on from Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Okay? Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And I know Reverend Pinckney now is on is one of the programs on. Reverend Pinckney on Sunday.
Yeah.
You know Reverend Pinckney, don't you? Edward Pinckney?
Yes, sir.
In Benton Harbor? Yes, yeah. He's on from 5 to 6 on Sunday. I plan to listen to his program and so forth, because I announce his program every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and at the beginning of my program. I'm Baba Oshi. It's a pleasure to talk with you, my brother. I hope you begin to listen next week.
All right. Hotep and peace.
Hotep there, brother. Hotep. We end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. A great weekend. Shemhotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. A BB for Hardier means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will. I don't care what somebody else says, but we will be victorious. Peace, family.